right, so we're going to start from the 8th parak in the Shar HaYichud, getting a little closer towards the end of the first major section. So this parak basically is going to explore, again, because in the last parak we spoke a lot about the 7 proofs that Hashem is Echad, right, that He's one. Now we're going to spend a little bit of time in this parak kind of just defining what that means, Echad. So we'll see that there's really going to be 2 different kinds of Echads that will kind of break down into other subcategories, as we'll see. Okay, so in the beginning of the 8th parak, he says, Ach beir ofnei ha-echad ha-amiti v'ha-echad ha-uverhu. So, as we'll see, there are really 2 different types of echads. There is echad, there's unity in what we call ha-echad ha-amiti, the true definition, like objective unity that Hashem has. And then there's what we call ha-echad ha-uver, or as we'll see, ha-echad ha-mikri, like incidental or conventional, or, you know, the type of unity that we're used to talking about. So what's the difference exactly? She'ha'echad shem nigzar min ha'achdus. So the word echad, as we know, comes from the word achdus, comes from the word unity, right? V'hu ne'amar al shnei inyanim. So that is derived, or that refers to 2 separate ideas. Ha'echad mehem mikri v'hu ha'uver, v'hasheni atzmi kayam v'hu ha'amiti. So this is what we were just alluding to before. One type of echad is like an objective echad, Hashem echad, that's objective, it's true. And then there's this other kind of echad, which is what we call mikri, which is incidental, or it's over, it's conventional, it's passing, it's not objective unity, as we'll see in a second. V'ha'echad ha'mikri, gam kein hu al shnei inyanim. And even within incidental unity, right, ha'echad ha'mikri, that can also be divided further into 2 subcategories. Ha'echad mehem nir'eh bo haribuy, v'ha'klau v'ha'kibutz. So for example, one of those categories, right, we see characteristics of things like multitude, right, multiplicity, collectivity, things that are kind of, you know, bunched together in a group. Kasuga echada shehu kolel min imrabim. For example, when you have, let's say, one type of something that has a lot of different species within that type, right? Or for example, v'chamin ha'echad ha'kolel ishim rabim. Or let's say, for example, you had one man. So one man, as was, I'm sorry, if you had one species that was made up of many different, individuals within the species, v'cha'ish ha'echad ha'mechubar mechalakim rabim. Or even one man or one human being, as we know, is comprised of many different parts, right? In other words, within their, many different physical parts of their body. Or let's say an army, which includes many men. Meaning, when you talk about, like, for example, like one army, so an army is a unit, is a whole unit, is one, but that one is comprised of many different parts, of many different individuals, right? A human being is one person that's comprised of many different moving parts, right? Ucha amrenu, for example, like we say, kor echad, v'hin echad, v'rova echad, v'litra achas, v'chol echad mehem kolel dvarim rabim, ye'al meral kol echad mehem echad. For example, and he lists these different measurements from the Torah, a hin, a rova, a litra, these are different, measurements that they used to use to measure liquids or solids, whatever it was. So all of these measurements contain, smaller measurements within it, right? So in other words, each of them are still considered to be echad. Each of them are still considered to be to a certain extent are considered to be one. Okay? So then he says, V'chol echad mimashe hiskarnu nikra echad al derech ha'avara. So all the types of echad, of oneness, of unity that we just mentioned, these are conventional. These are things that we're used to calling a unit. V'hu mipnei shahadvarim ahim asher yikabetzo sam hashem ahu shavim b'inyan echad. And the reason why these are conventionally considered a unit is because all of these things that we've mentioned up until now could also apply in the plural, right? In other words, v'nikra rav mipnesha kolel dvarim rabim. And they could be called in the plural because there could be multiples or multitudes of the things that we just mentioned, right? You could have multiple armies. You could have multiple people, right? You could have multiples pretty much of anything that we just spoke about. V'chasher yispardu advarim ahim biyisbodidu. So now when you stop to think about and contemplate what we just mentioned, ye'amer al kol echad mehem echad. Each of the things that we just mentioned can technically be called a unit, can be called echad. V'ha'echad b'chemo ha'inyanim ha'ilasher zachaynu mikre v'hu echad mitzad v'rav mitzad. So this idea again, just to kind of recap for those who might have missed the very beginning, right now we're essentially breaking down the concept of echad, of achdus. So what does it mean that Hashem is echad? So we started out by saying that there are two major categories of echad. There's echad ha'amiti, objective truth, which is what Hashem is, and then there's echad ha'mikri, or incidental, or like you know incidental truth, or maybe what we would call like normal truth, or something which is more conventional for us. So for each of these, there's going to be two subcategories. So far, we've only mentioned the first subcategory of Echad HaMikri, of conventional truth, which is that something which, let's say, for example, is a whole unit, like an army, is also made up of individuals, like the people in the army, or let's say, for example, a human being is made up of, the parts of their body. So that's an example of something which is a unit, but the unit can also be pluralized. There can also be multiple armies, multiple people, right? That's called Echad HaMikri. That's conventional unity. It's not something which has to be defined as one, and in other words, one to the exclusion of anything else. It's just it just happens to be we're talking about one person, one army, etc. Okay, that's the first subcategory of conventional unity. The second subcategory of conventional unity is hu ha'echad ha'ne'emar al ha'isha echad. We're talking about now an individual person lo misrabev lo cholel dvarim rabim. And again, he's not this person. It's not he's not plural. He's not a mixture, a combination of multiple things. Kanirem imenu, as we can see, ahu rav be'atzmo mitzad chiburo michomer v'tzura va'etzem u'mikre. Of whom a kabel ha'havaya ve'ha'hefseid v'ha'chiluk v'ha'chiwur v'ha'prida v'ha'shinui v'ha'chiluk v'ha'shituf. It's just that the person in and of themselves is made up of multiple things. In other words, and these are not like physical things that they're made up of, but these are more like spiritual matters, like what we call Chomer and Tzura. We already spoke a lot about Chomer and Tzura earlier, right? Chomer and Tzura literally mean matter and form, the different ways that we consider a human being to be formed. Then we have Etzem and Mikre, essence versus things that are just incidental or conventional. Then we have Mekabel ha'havaya ve'ha'hefseid, that they're susceptible to being created or to being destroyed. And then there's Chiluk and Chibur, division, and there's combination, and prida and shinui is separation and association, and chiluf and shituf is change and variation. In other words, all of these things, these aren't like physical characteristics per se, but they're like incidences or they're events or things that can happen throughout your life that can alter or change who you are. So it's not that, so this is the second subcategory of what it means to be one, of what it means to have achdus. It doesn't mean to say that you're multiple people or you're multiple things, but you are an individual made up of multiple facets. That's what we call multifaceted, right? You're a multifaceted individual. So imkain haribu yasig hadavar hanemar alav echad mikol mashasiparnu mipnei shehem kineged ha'achdus. So therefore, the concept of plurality, the idea of multiple things, must be attributed to anything that we just mentioned. Ki ha'echad hanemar al hadavar asher yasigenu v'atzmo inyan me'inyinei haribui v'hashinui hu mikre b'lisafik. By definition, when we talk about something which can have multiples, which can be plural, for example, so that has to be b'derech mikre. That has to be achdus in the conventional sense of the word, but not in the true sense. Again, as we'll see in a second, this hopefully will become a little bit more clear when we get to the next part, that the whole point of this is to contrast this to the unity or the oneness of Hashem, where Hashem is echad to the exclusion of anybody else, right? At this point, we're just describing things that are essentially conventional echad. They're conventional achdus. It's not to say that they're the only army, the only person, the only thing that we're talking about. It happens to be that they're one of many, right? Just as we said that there's one unit called an army, but there are many people who are made up of that whole unit. So that's echad hamikre. That's the conventional sense of achdus. Whereas the echad haetzem, or the echad haamiti that we're about to talk about, that is objective oneness that no one else has, that only God can have, as we'll see. Okay, so far we've just basically given this kind of two categories, right? Two subcategories within Echad Ha'etzem. I'm sorry, within Echad HaMikri, within conventional Achdus, which is the notion of a whole unit with individuals within it, or within an individual person, but different stages of their lives or different things that can change throughout their lives. Okay, so that's kind of the first major category. So now moving on to Echad Ha'emes, right? So Echad Ha'emes Yamer Gamken al Shnei Panim. There are also two subcategories of what it means to have objective you know, to have objective unity. One is in terms of your thought process. In other words, it's much more abstract, and the other one is much more down to earth. So what does that mean? When we talk about oneness or achdus in the abstract, in your thought process, so in that sense, it's really just what he calls ha'echad ha'minyani. That's like numerical oneness. One in the sense that one is the beginning of all the numbers. One is the first number. V'tam ha'echad ha'minyani shu os v'siman l'schila she'in t'chila l'fana. Ki kol t'chila mitis t'ikarei echad. K'mo she'nemer v'hi erev v'hi voker yom echad. V'mkom yom rishon ho'tzio b'lishon echad. In other words, in essence, so when you see the word echad, right, the number one, all the number one really means is this is the first of a list, right? Nothing comes before this. And that's actually the reason why he says, he actually gives an interesting shot here, the reason why the Pasuk in Parshas Bereishis on the first day of creation says, Vahi Erev, Vahi Voker, Yom Echad, as opposed to Yom Rishon, right? Rashi and Chumash and many Mefarshim are bothered by this question, because all the other days of creation it says, Yom Sheni, Shlishi, Rivi'i, etc. So why would it write Echad as opposed to Rishon, which would fit the format more? So according to the Chovos HaLevavos, the reason is because the word Echad is teaching you that nothing came before this. Echad means this is the very first thing that's here to the exclusion of anything else, right? So he says, Mipnesha Echad Shem L'chol because again, the word echad implies this is the very first thing. There was nothing before this. And the more that you add on, the more that you tack on to that original one, so then you start to call it sheni, shlishi, revi, chamishi, etc., etc. And eventually you get back to one. Right? If you think about it, every time you start a new unit, right? In other words, like a new unit of in terms of a number, right? So you have ones, tens, hundreds, thousands, tens, right? Every single one of those starts with the number one, right? One, ten, a hundred, a thousand, 10,000, a hundred, right? Every time you start a new unit, a new set, a new you know, place within numbers, it's always with the number one, because one is always starting something new. Specifically, the term echad refers to starting something brand new. So that's essentially what the word echad means here as well. V'alkeina yageder haminyan. So the definition, therefore, of a number is klal murkav min ha'achadim. A number is a sum of its units, just like we spoke about this earlier. How a whole is the sum of its parts. A number is the sum of its units. V'hatam shekrasiv machashavi. The reason he says why I call this abstract, why this is more kind of in your thoughts as opposed to more concrete. Mipnesha haminyan eino nichnas tachas achushim hagashmiim, because numbers, the idea of a number, is not something that you can sense physically. It's just something which is more mental, which is in your thought process. It's only those objects that are numbered, things that are already counted, that you're able to sense with the five senses. In other words, for example, if I see five apples in front of me, so I can see, I can use my sight, or I can use my taste or smell or whatever to discern that there are five apples. But I can't discern that there's that there's such a thing as the number five. That's not a thing, right? That idea of a number is not something which is subject to my senses. It's something which is more in my thought process that I can think about. So that's why he says this is you know, kind of limited to what we call the echad hamachshavi. It's something which is kind of limited within my thought process. So that's the first category, the first subcategory of echad ha'amiti or echad ha'etzem, of true objective truth, is just in the more abstract, the same way that, you know, that the same way that I can think about the number one, I can think about God as being one. But again, I can't concretize that in any sort of way. Okay, that's the first subcategory. Then he says, V'ha'inyan ha'sheni, this is the second subcategory, asher hu echad amiti nimtza b'fawal. There is also a notion of discovering the achdus, the unity of Hashem, practically, and like in a concrete way. Right, so he explains, who in Yana Sherlo Yisrabe, Velo Yishtane, Velo Yischalif, Velo Yisupar, Bemido, Mimido Sagashmiim, Velo Sasigehu, Lo Havaya, Velo Hefse, Velo Sichla, Velo Yasek, Velo Yanua, Velo Yidmel Davar, Velo Yidme Ilav Davar, Velo Yishtatefim Davar, Ki Hu Alko Panem Echad MS. This is a lot of what he just wrote in this paragraph is very reminiscent of a lot of the things that the Rambam writes in his Yud Gimel Ikarei Amun, in his 13 Principles of Faith, where he basically says that what it means to actually see God as one in terms of, you know, in terms of in a concrete fashion, what that basically means is that God doesn't resemble human beings at all. That God is not, there's no plurality. There are no multiple gods. God never changes. God never alters who he is, right? God doesn't have any physical traits, right? That's what we call, he's incorporeal. He doesn't have any physical traits about him. He doesn't resemble us. We don't resemble him. He doesn't change. He doesn't move, right? Everything about him is perfect, is objective. There's no change within God. Everything is really the same. And therefore, therefore we assume that that's what it means to have Echad Ha'amiti Bifoal. That's the notion of having true, you know, having the true aspect of God, the oneness of God, in a concrete, practical fashion. You're back, Lauren? You good? Okay.
Yeah. Great. Sorry.
No, it's okay. No, right. No, good. Okay. So that's the idea of Echad, of Hashem Ha'amiti, the true one, in terms of a practical fashion. So again, just to kind of recap the last point that we did, we mentioned the fact that there's a second aspect, the second notion of Echad, Echad Ha'amiti or Echad Ha'etzem, which is objective unity. And we said that there are two facets to that as well. There's Echad Ha'amiti in the sense of Machshava, in the way that I think about it. It's more abstract, just like I think about the number one, but I can't really sense it. And then we said there is this aspect of Echad Ha'amiti Befoal in a more concrete way, which is that God doesn't resemble mankind in any way. God is perfect. He's incorporeal. He doesn't have a body. All those kinds of things. Okay. So now he continues. V'hu shoresh l'chol hamisrabe kasher avar midvarenu. So now it turns out that this is the source of everything that we've said in terms of let's say, for example, the things that are increasing, right? In other words, in terms of how we view Hashem. Because again, as we mentioned this before, Achdus or unity is the height or is the cause of multiplicity, of plurality, and therefore something which is objectively echad, which is objectively one, cannot have a beginning and cannot have a cause, because that is God. God is just the beginning of everything, and nothing created God. Whatever has a beginning and whatever has no end, whatever is infinite, something which is finite and limited eventually is going to wither away and die. It's going to be destroyed. And therefore, anything which is subject to, you know, eventually being destroyed, mishtaneh, it's going to change at some point. The hashinui keneged ha'achdus, and the very fact that something can change is defying the aspect or the idea of objective unity. So if something is able to change from its original state, that means that it's not really objectively one. Because it's actually something which is going to be in addition to the way that it was before. Which means that by its very nature, it's going to be subject to plurality, to multiplicity, which can only happen to something which is not objectively one. And the same is true, let's say, for something which is incidental, right? Like we spoke about before, the echad hamikri, something which is more the conventional achdus, right? So he says v'chol asher yasigenu mikre, and anything, in other words, whatever has something incidental about it, by definition, is misrabet. That's pluralistic. That's not there's nothing objective. Unified or the aspect of unity about it. And the notion of true echad, of the objective oneness of Hashem, is something which can never change. So to put this into very, very simple terms, because he uses like very, very, like, you know, poetic Hebrew here, but to put it into very basic terms, what he's essentially saying is that anything or any situation where something is subject to change or something is subject to, you know, to alter, to be changed at some point, by definition, that is not objectively one. That is something which is more incidental. It's something which, you know, is one in a certain sense, but it's not, but it's subject to changing. Whereas something which will never change under any circumstances is considered to be objective truth, which is essentially what Hashem is. Okay, do you have any questions so far? Does that make a little bit of sense? We're good?
Okay. Yeah, we're good.
Okay, great. Okay, so fine. So moving on. So he says, V'im Yomar Omer. So if someone's gonna say, Shahachtus ba'echad ha'emes mikra. Someone wants to claim that what we consider to be objective unity of God is really just incidental, meaning maybe God will change. In other words, maybe God exists, but who's to say that his unity, that his oneness is going to last? So no, no more you should say to him, ki inyan ha'achdus ba'echad ha'emes hu harchakas ha'ribui v'harav mimenu. We'll say that attributing the aspect of true achdus, of true unity, to God, the purpose of that is to teach us that he is not, pluralistic, or he doesn't have multiplicity, that God is one to the exclusion of anyone or anything else. V'chasher nesaper ha'echad, and when we describe Hashem as one, lo nesaperehu ki'im be'inyan afisas haribui v'harav. In other words, the only way that we can describe God is by describing what he's not, because we don't really know what God is, but we know what God isn't, right? We know that God isn't something that's multiple or that has plurality to it. V'ha'echad ha'emes, lo yisupar b'mida shemichayeves le'etzem kvodo ribu v'lushinui v'lo chilof b'shum panim. And we know that true achdus, that true unity, cannot be described by any attribute or by anything that Hashem has in terms of plurality, in terms of change, or in terms of things that are going to be altered, because God is objectively perfect and is objectively unchanging. Uvazen nishlimu kol dvarenu be'echad ha'over ve'echad ha'emes ata dalachas. He says this is the conclusion of his idea in this chapter, which are the differences between objective truth and basically conventional or subjective truth. So just to summarize before we move on to the next parak, just to kind of summarize everything that we spoke about until now in this parak, which is that there are essentially, as we said in the beginning, there are two major categories of echad. There's echad ha'etzem or echad ha'amiti, true objective truth, and then there's echad echad ha'etzem or echad ha'mikri, which is incidental or conventional truth. So he said within conventional truth, we have two subcategories. One is when you have, let's say, a whole unit of multiple individuals made up of that unit, or you have one person, but there are multiple stages in their life where they change and develop. That's all called echad ha'etzem echad ha'mikri, or in other words, basically incidental achdus. And then on the other hand, we have basically objective unity of God, which is echad ha'amiti or echad ha'etzem, which is the essential truth, which is something which will never be altered and something which will never be changed. God, you know, for example, the notion that God doesn't have a body and that God is perfect and all that. So that's all included in the terms echad. Okay, do you have any questions before we move on? We're good? Good. Okay, fine. So let's...
We're
good. Great. Okay, awesome. Okay, so let's move on to the next parak. It's parak test. So now he continues. He says, Acharaya shaboreis barach echad emes. So the proof that Hashem is the absolute true unity, right, that there is no real true unity aside from him, no matter, we could say the following. So this really goes back to some of the arguments that we were making in the previous chapters, which is that anything which is a composite, anything which is a mixture, anything which is a combination of other things, by definition can only come into existence, right, when the parts of those things existed beforehand. That means you have to unite or fuse together different aspects, different parts. The ikar hashituf ha'achdus, and the main idea of association of these different parts is when you fuse them together into a single unit. Right, and the idea, the existence of something which is a combination of different things, like a mixture, an amalgamation of different things, is not possible, right, unless you had the raw materials existing beforehand. Because a chibur, a combination, is something which by definition comes from more than one thing. The ikar hamachlokes harav, and the source of all argument, of all divisiveness, comes from plurality. When people disagree about different viewpoints, when people see things differently, that's what leads to arguments. So therefore, he says, because divisiveness and argument, right, is rooted in plurality and people seeing things differently, so since all of these different mixtures
come from, you know, a mixture and an arrangement of things in the world as a whole, and all the parts that make up the whole, right? So by definition, there's going to be this kind of balance or the struggle almost between achdus, between unity on the one hand, and between rav, between plurality and divisiveness, and, you know, being argumentative on the other hand. And since we know that the aspect of unity preceded the aspect of plurality, which by definition it has to, because otherwise you can't have plurality, you can't have multiples of something or a mixture of something without the raw material first. The same way that the number one precedes other numbers by its very definition. Min hadin shetihia ilas kol misrabe bilti misrabe birosh haaschalos mepenei hakdamas inyan haachdos lechol misrabe. Therefore, he says that it would make sense that the first cause of everything, namely Hashem, right? In other words, the first cause of everything, which is plural, which is a mixture of something, which was the very first thing that was created, was not plural at all, because again, in order for something to be pluralistic, to imply plurality or multiplicity, the implication is that there needs to be something beforehand that's being used to make that thing into a state of multiplicity. And since, if you go all the way back, a cause has to start from somewhere. And this we already proved much earlier in the Sefer, that it's impossible for something to create itself, right? We spoke about that earlier a few days ago. Therefore, it's impossible for the cause of Achdus and the cause of Rav, the cause of unity and the cause of plurality, to itself also be unity and plurality. In other words, the sources for all of these things have to also be from a singular source. And since the initial cause of creation cannot be plural, and it can't be a combination of plurality and unity, by definition, it must have been created from one true creator. Because it's impossible to suggest that initially the world was created from either something which was plurality or something which is a mixture of plurality and unity. It doesn't make sense to say that. And we've already explained, ki ha'ilos, right, that the causes, kol asher ta'alena lamala, the further up you go, tismaitna, the further up you go, the fewer causes you're going to find, ad asher tihiyena magios l'shoresh ha'minyan, until you get to the root, to the source of all numbers, v'hu echad ha'emes, ha'boreis barach, which is Hashem. Hashem ultimately is the source of all creation, so the further up the chain you go, so the less plurality you're going to have, until eventually you reach the pinnacle, the height, the peak of achdus, which is Hashem himself. Umin hayadua od, and we know further, kichol ma sheyimatzei b'shum davar mikra, that anything which we found, again, in something which is incidental, something which has achdus, but it's not intrinsic, it's not fundamental, eifshar shelo yimatzei b'davar acher atzmi amiti, ve'ein lo ha'ataka mimenu kiyim b'hipasdo. It's impossible, therefore, that you won't find, if something which is has an incidental aspect to it, it also must have something that exists in its true essence that cannot be separated from it without destroying it. For example, kachom, let's say when it comes to heat, b'mayim hacham. Let's say, for example, one of the features of hot water is the fact that it's hot. Now, is the hot water being hot something intrinsic? No, it's, in other words, the hot water is the actual essence of the thing that I have. The fact that hot water is hot is almost like incidental to the hot water, right? Shehu mikra b'mayim. It just happens to be that hot water is hot. Fahuva esh atzmi kayam, right? As opposed to, let's say, for example, fire, right? Fire, the whole essence of fire is hot. In other words, you wouldn't classify hot water as hot as much as you would classify fire as hot. Fire, its whole essence is heat. Hot water, you know, the fact that it's hot is more incidental to the water. Or, for example, the kalachos, let's say it comes to moisture. Bagufin halachim. So when it comes to moisture, let's say within the human body, so that's something which is just kind of incidental. Shehim mikrevahem. Whereas v'hi atzmis kayem es b'mayim. In other words, the water itself is intrinsically moist, but any moisture that builds up inside of a human body is more incidental. So you could already see, obviously, you know, it can get a little bit tricky, you know, where do you draw the line exactly? But certain things are described a certain way fundamentally, and other things, you know, their properties are kind of, you know, they're true, but they're not like the main crux of the thing that we're dealing with. Umin hayadua od, and we know further, anything which is found, any property of an item which is incidental, which is not intrinsic to the item, so something which is incidental to an item, that object needs to have received that incidental property from something else where it's incidental, right? In other words, from something else where that incidental property is actually intrinsic to it. For example, the heat of hot water, which as we said before is merely incidental, it's not the main part of the water, it just happens to be hot. How do you get hot water? Through fire. So in other words, the fire, whose very essence is heat, heat actually defines fire, is what causes water to become hot. Now, even though the heat component of the water is merely incidental, it's not the main component of the water, but that incidental component was brought about through fire, where the heat actually is intrinsic to the fire. For example, moisture. Right, again, like I said before, right? When you take water and you pour it on something, it becomes soaking wet. So water is intrinsically wet. When I pour it on something else, so the other item becomes wet. Now, maybe the fact that it's wet is not intrinsic to the other item, but the way in which that incidental property of moisture came about was through water, which again is intrinsically wet. The truth is, this is true for anything, if you were to examine it further. Based on this principle, we can now, you know, direct our words and think about this idea in the context of Achdus, of unity of Hashem. Because as we already mentioned before, since the aspect of Achdus, of unity, is found in everyone, at least in an incidental fashion, because again, we're not God, so we don't have unity, we don't have Achdus Ha'amiti, you know, in other words, the true unity, but we have it more as incidental unity. So, min ha'din hu shetihye bi'i So therefore, in other words, it must follow necessarily that, in other words, it has to be true and it has to be a permanent essence of the cause of all things that were created. In other words, the same way that fire is intrinsically hot, and then when I put it under the water becomes incidentally hot, right? So too, God is intrinsically echad, has achdus intrinsically, and when he created us, we became achdus incidentally, right? It's almost like, you know, almost like a parallel to the case of the moisture and the case of the heat. Okay, does that make sense? That must make sense? I know it's a little bit, yeah, we're good? Okay, fine. So he says, Now we try to think about the idea of objective truth amongst those things that Hashem created. That idea doesn't exist. There is no such thing as objective truth amongst the creations of the world, because only God is considered to be an objective truth. So he says that even if you were going to start to call these different categories of things, you're going to call, the sugim are like the broader categories, like animals. The minim are like the subcategories, and the ishim are the individuals, right? The specific animals, and the atzamim is the essence of something, and the mikra are the, as we mentioned before, the incidental properties of something, or the planets and the stars and all the celestial beings and the numbers and all the things that we mentioning up until now. All of those things, by definition, are finite and they're limited. And the only reason we call it one, it's not to say that these are objectively one, that these represent objective achdus, but in reality, these are just subjective. These are, you know, what we colloquially refer to as echad, right? We call all of these things one. Like, in other words, for example, if you saw, let's say, if you looked up at the heavens and you see a whole bunch of stars, so you wouldn't start pointing to each individual star and, you know, talking about each one, but you would just say the collective. reflect, oh, look, there are stars in the heavens, right? In other words, you would just look up and see stars in general. V'hu rav ba'atzmo, b'mneshe mekabel haribui v'hashinu v'achiluk v'machlokes, v'achibur v'aprida v'atosepes v'achisar v'atnuva v'menucha v'adimu v'atzura, shara mikrim ha'miyuchadim ha'kolim cholechad mehabruim. So all of these things, essentially, each of them are plural by definition, because all of these things are subject to changing and being divided and separated and being associated and disassociated and increasing and diminishing and moving around and stopping and, you know, their tzura and their chomer, the way that they appear and their form and their image and everything else which is incidental to them, everything comes from somewhere. And therefore, nothing in this world, nothing physical in this world, can ever truly be called ha'echad ha'amiti, the true objective unity, that is God alone. And because the concept of unity is only found amongst this world, amongst creatures of this world, in an incidental fashion, not in an intrinsic one, and now all the evidence is telling us that God is one, now we can know with clarity, this is exactly the point that we were making before. This idea, this objective idea of this, rather this subjective or incidental unity that we have, comes from God. The same way that the fire, which in its very essence is hot, is going to heat up the water and make it incidentally hot, God, who is objectively one, is going to make us one by creating us. God is the only true unity that exists. All of these ideas, the implication of what it means to have objective achdus, objective unity, that term is not fit for anyone to use other than God. And therefore, all of the matters that we mentioned earlier, the idea of plurality and things that are incidental and moving and motion and comparisons and qualities, none of those terms make any sense when referring to Hashem. Like David HaMelech says, Rabos astisa ata Hashem Elokai niflo osecha machshev osecha elinu in aroche lecha. David HaMelech says until him, basically, Hashem, your handiwork, your work is so amazing, no one can compare it to you. It says in Sefer Yeshaya, who will compare to you, Hashem, that we can say about him that he is holy? It says in Yeshayahu, who can own up? Who can be similar to God? How can anyone possibly resemble him? The Nehemar, it says, in kamocha v'elokim Hashem, in kama asecha. There is none like you, Hashem. The Nehemar, it says, in kamocha Hashem, gadol atov v'gadol shimcha b'gvura. No one is like you. No one is as great as you. Uchvar his ba'er v'his parer, and we've already explained and clarified, ki borei ha'olam yisparach echad emes, that Hashem is the one true God. V'she'en echad emes, so, and there is no one as true as him. Anything else which is one is only subjective, because there, that means that they have plurality in another sense. So essentially, just to summarize, again, it's a really basic point that he's making here, but essentially what he's saying is that God is objectively one, whereas everything else in this world basically is not objectively one. Everything else in this world is really subjective. Everything else in this world is, you know, has plurality and motion and movement and change. So again, really the two prakim that we did today, Parakhes and Tess, kind of play off of each other really well, because they both talk about the notion of exploring what it means that Hashem is Echad. Because after yesterday, last few days, where we went through the seven proofs that Hashem is actually Echad, and we've sufficiently proven that, so now, today, we spoke a lot about the notion of how to define what it means that Hashem is Echad. So again, we spoke about the idea of objective unity versus subjective or incidental unity. And then in this parak, we essentially just spoke about the notion that it's not befitting, it's not appropriate to call God by anything other than objectively the one true God. Okay, so let's we'll stop here for now.